This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, as the U.S. Equestrian Federation awarded Lana DuPont Wright the 2015 USEF Lifetime Achievement Award, we have an exclusive interview with Lana as she shares her life and her career with horses. Well, Lana, I'd like to begin with your early childhood because you've had such an illustrious career with horses in so many different disciplines. But like most young girls, it began with ponies, no doubt, in your early childhood.
Yes, my mom had some horses, and she was a fox hunter, and I had a pony, and I had the pictures of them showing or something. I don't remember that particularly, but she would take me hunting, and this wonderful man that worked for her, that raised me and taught me everything, you know, would take me hunting all the time with my mom. So really, my early was not so much ponies, but fox hunting is where I remember it. And I would go out and, you know, hunt with her anytime I could. And then I went away to school, you know, but my very early days, you know, I was a teenager before I really got into a lot of riding at school that I can remember. And horse showing just at Oldfield School. I just went in the horse show things, and then I got into eventing from that. But the very early days with the riding, a little bit of ponies and some that, little shows that they took me to, and that was about it that I can really remember.
Like so many eventers, the foundation is often made in the hunting field. So when you got into eventing, then it was a natural progression for you to go cross-country. But how about the other phases?
No, that's right. I was at school, boarding school, and my senior year, I was able to go in my first event. In those days, event, what is an event? We did a little horse showing, but an event. And it was at Mrs. Bedford, who was sort of the National Pony Club, I think. She had so much to do with early pony clubs around this part of the country. And she had an event there, and that was my first thing. We didn't even walk the course. I didn't know what it was. I had a mare that I showed, but she'd never done a dressage test or anything. Anyway, I managed to stay in the ring, I guess. And my show jumping would be okay because this mare showed a little bit. And then I hadn't even walked the cross-country course. They pointed it out and said, oh, look, you go out there and you go out there, and pointed at this and that. And I won the event, but I think I was about the only person that got around the cross-country on course. Nobody knew anything about it, and everybody sort of lost their way, eliminated a fence or something. So I ended up winning, but it made me very hungry. I said, oh, my God, I've got to learn something about this. And because of fox hunting, you're right, cross-country was sort of the thing that was okay, and I knew that was something you had to have a good horse for, and show jumping and whatnot. But then dressage, I had to learn, what is this dressage about? So I went to Vermont, where General Cole, Pepper Cole, and Stuart Trevoranus were doing I don't know if it was a month or what, but a long clinic, maybe 2 weeks or something. And Trish Gilbert was there and a bunch of other people in the early days. And we built the cross-country course, and we built the steeplechase especially. Cross-country was sort of, but how primitive it was in those days. So that was where I sort of learned a little. And then more dressage and whatnot with Richard Wachin, who was out of the Spanish Riding School at one time, I think. But he was at Sunnyfield Farm in New York. So my dear friend Donnan Sharp and myself went and took lessons, dressage lessons up at Sunnyfield Farm. And that's where I started all this. And then ended up, you know, doing more events and learning more over the couple of years. Few years there, and then in 61 ended up at badminton, which was something that I always wanted to do, and went to Goldman's.
Eddie Goldman?
Yes, Eddie Goldman, that's right. I had a couple of months there before badminton, and was 10th at badminton. I think that's a great, great horse. My horse, Mr. Wister, was one that my mother had given me off the racetrack, and so I'd sort of made him. He was a bit of a rogue, I'll tell you. He was quite a rogue. And Buck, oh my gosh. So he could throw me off anytime he wanted, but after about a year or so, you know, it just all changed. Cooled right down, and he was just awesome. So he was the one that took me to badminton, and a fabulous jumper. So that's where I went.
So from very, as you say, primitive beginnings with eventing in this country, you went to the pinnacle of sport, Babington Horse Trials. That's a huge change in terms of the environment and the popularity of the sport over there. Did you find that atmosphere in any way intimidated, or was it that it didn't have such a huge following that you were just able to focus on it? There wasn't the huge crowds that there are today.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And in this country, there were a lot of events coming on. I was talking about in 57, 58 when I was up at learning how to do this, to 61. So there was a lot of events and, you know, a few different things. But they were primitive compared to what things are gotten to now, you know. And I'm trying to think where some of our three-day events were.
At Ledyard?
Ledyard, yes, Ledyard was one, definitely, yes. And I think we actually put one on down here in Delaware. I had a lot to do with that. We put one on there. And then Virginia, of course, down in Virginia there were some. But when you went to badminton, that was an eye-opener.
Were your impressions of badminton? I'm curious about the journey because it's so easy these days, but back then I'm sure it was a whole different operation to get the horses there even.
Yes, well, it was. No jet, I don't think. It was all prop plane, and a man that worked for my mother, I didn't know how to get there. Anyway, he flew over with the horse, and I followed and went to Eddie Goldman's. So I was there for a couple months, you know. But it was a big eye-opener, the whole thing. But fabulous horse. That particular year, rain. Maybe it's not that particular year. Maybe it's often in England, right? But it was a big eye-opener. And we did get around. We did all right.
And the format in those days, Lana, would have been different anyway. I mean, not just the long format, but the extra long format.
Yes, we had a gallop in after the cross country, after all the jumps. I think there was probably a mile, maybe, I'm not sure, a mile or so, of just a gallop in. Don't really remember the timing of anything. I don't know how it was scored and all at that time, but there was a lot, lots and lots. It was a much more endurance, you know. Things have gotten much shorter now. So, but at that time, there was a lot of endurance to it. So it was definitely an eye-opener. And then we had Richard Wachen at Gladstone, New Jersey, towards 62 and 3 to learn more about dressage, get better. And there was Kevin Freeman, Mike Plum.
As you say, the dressage has always been important because it all begins there.
It does.
What sort of things were you finding to be really helpful at that stage in your early career, Lana, getting into international eventing?
Well, I always thought the dressage was very, very important because that's where you have to get your start. You need to be right up there. Very hard for me. I was learning all about dressage. I was not a great dressage rider, but I sure worked hard. And getting the horse there was a great big, very much an English-type thoroughbred, American thoroughbred, but he was a great big raw-boned horse that, you know, was very kind and honest, but very roguish. He was ticklish and whatnot. He'd bite you in a second, kick you in a second, but not mean in that respect. Just didn't want to be tickled. And, you know, to get good at dressage, I never was good enough, never. And, you know, I really respect the great riders, especially the English riders. They deserve to go to the Olympics first, I think. Not me, but I was there.
But your performance at Babington, of course, had set you on the international stage.
Yes. I was in Camden, South Carolina, training with with a group of people that would be the Pan American Games and then probably the Olympics or whatever. And, you know, there were some nice horses, but there was not a lot of horses around. I had a good one, and there were a few, but there were not a lot of horses around to select from. And when it got to selecting for the Olympics, a lot of it was survival of the fittest, which is the soundest one. Michael Page had Little Grasshopper, and he was super. But he had an ailment that my husband was kind of treating, helping Michael with and whatnot. And, you know, he had to walking for about a month, just steady walking. And Michael was very devoted to that and just did exactly, and he came along fine. Mike Plum had Markham, who had a problem shipping, and we actually lost him. I think when they shipped to Tokyo, they lost him. I think they had to stop somewhere around Chicago and I think put the horse down because he was not shipping. They had tried very hard to prepare for it ahead of time, you know, weeks before, but whatever did not work.
At the verge of you making your debut and making history as the first woman to be on an Olympic team in the Tokyo Olympics, Lano, did that really impact you as at the time that you were making history, or has it later become, you know, so significant now when you look back, here we are in an Olympic year, and if it wasn't for you blazing that trail, young women wouldn't be where they are today?
Maybe not. I don't know. Hey, listen, women have certainly proven they can do the sport very well, that's for sure. You know, I didn't know very long ahead of time that I was going to even make it. I can't remember how length of time. I guess we had enough time to get shots and whatever had to be done, you know, prepare. But I certainly didn't think I was making the team very early in the selection process, you know, whatever. So it was a bit of a rush, I thought. I thought, oh, my gosh, thinking back, oh, I wish I'd had months where I could have prepared myself even better, you know, with fitness and everything. But I really didn't think we were making it. And then the rules got changed, so I could be selected. And then I think it was more of a process of elimination, who was sound enough and whatnot. So when Mike Plum lost his horse, then we had one other horse, Billy Haggard's horse, which is Bold Minstrel, a fabulous horse that Billy was kind enough to loan or whatever to Mike. And he was a three-day horse, but he was also a jumper, I think. I mean, he could do anything. So it was Billy Haggard, who I think had ridden, if you can look back, he had ridden maybe the Pan American Games a couple of years before or something. And anyway, the horse was loaned to Mike Plum, and he rode them in Tokyo. He rode that horse in Tokyo. He was shipped over later, you know, a few days later, because they had to put the other horse down. So we went there with three horses. I don't think there was a spare, or maybe there was a spare, but it wasn't our choice. So Bold Minstrel came over, you know, a few days later.
What do you remember your impressions, Lana, of arriving in Tokyo to compete in Olympic Games? It's always a big deal, but certainly being the first woman on an Olympic team must have been very impressionable.
It was. You know, the horses went over. A couple of the boys, maybe Kevin Freeman, I don't remember who went with the horses. Maybe Mike Plum, a couple of people went. The riders and the other riders and a lot of the people went into Tokyo and went through the process in Tokyo. Now, we were shipped out to what I think it was called Karazawa or something like that, which took hours. I don't know how many miles, but the roads were rough and we were on a bus and bus. Now, the horses had gone on their own, ahead of us. I want to say they were probably ahead of us. I think they were there when we got there. It was a golf course type where we stayed. Very nice. Wonderful food, wonderful accommodations, very nice. The barns were there. Everything was quite nice, very nice, but it was seemed hours to get out there. And we were on a bumpety old bus. It was slow. The roads were rough. And it was very, very nice, you know. So at the impression, I just went along with the crowd and did what I was meant to do, I guess.
But the competition itself, of course, had its challenges. Tell us about the experience.
Oh, the experience. Well, I didn't do so terribly well. Dressage. I went and looked, you know, looked through, went out to the ring where it was going to be held, and I kind of stepped foot inside of the fence. This was a day or two before, a couple of days before or something, just to look at the ring, sort of, and somebody on another team said, "Don't you go in there, you'll be eliminated." I didn't know. I don't know all those rules. You know, at that time, it wasn't. I think they were just trying to get my goat. But anyway, I didn't. And then the cross country, we walked and walked and walked, and it was big, and I needed, you know, it was big. But again, very different than what we have nowadays. Nowadays, you have to really ride. We were much more, I mean, you really have to be on board with all the turns and the narrows and things like that. This, in those days, they were kind of, they were big fences and whatnot, but there wasn't narrows and things that they have now. You really have to be on top of much more to show jumping or something almost. But
so the fences would be more, you know, big, galloping, imposing.
Exactly. Exactly. Big and imposing. And it was wet. Was it wet? I know I did have a fall. I had a couple falls, really. I didn't do anything for the team, but we got around. And my dear friend Donna Sharp, she came and picked me up and threw me back on the horse. Now, you see, probably nowadays you would be eliminated if anybody kept near you, but in those days it was different. You know, the rules weren't quite the same. So she threw me on the horse and said, "Get going." So I did finish, but I must say that the three boys, the three men, were the ones that won the silver for us. And I was a go-along, but it was quite an experience. And when I look back, you know, I couldn't have done any different because it was those days, and I just was learning the best way I could. The more you do, the more, you know, the more you learn, the more you ride, the more horses. So, but I only had, really had the one horse.
And how did the show jumping go?
Well, I had, you know, when my horse had one of the falls, it broke his jaw down kind of close to the chin, which I didn't realize at the time. So he was hurting a little bit, and I had quite a few rails. Show jumping was never my thing. I wish it could have been better. It should have been better, but I just never was in the position to have enough horses to get good, really good at show jumping. And nowadays you have to be good. You have to be good at everything. But he was a great horse, and we had enough knockdowns that it didn't, you know, it didn't put me anywhere. And I had the falls too, which I had a lot of penalties. But we finished, and that was awesome.
And you made it into the history books, of course.
Yes.
And
yes.
What did you do when you came back with Wister?
Well, with Mr. Wister, I fox hunted him. He didn't go. I didn't do any more eventing, really. I had a couple of other horses. I think I had a half brother to him, and it was one line. He didn't make out. He didn't do anything great. And I hunted him. I just fox hunted him. I was a wonderful fox hunter, so that was my main thing. Don and Sharp and I would go to Virginia with about five horses, and stay at Sandy McLeod's and just fox hunt every day, because they're somewhere in Virginia, right in the Middleburg, Warrington, all that area. There was about, what, 5 or 6 different hunts, you know, and they'd hunt every day, including Sunday somewhere. So we would hunt and hunt and hunt for about a week or two until all the horses were a bit tired, and then we would go home. But we had a great time, and that's where what Mr. Wister sort of was doing. And then eventually I got married and had the children. So that particular eventing sort of came to a halt. And to keep those horses going and good ones, oh my, you know, that's hard. But I worked hard for those years to get there in 61, 64. And went on a little bit. And then when the kids came along and they grew up to be 5 and 6 years old and 7 and so on, we had a little group here of kids that rode ponies. Now they're wearing the ponies, because Dr. Wright, he could find ponies. Oh, my gosh. I don't know where he got them, because it was always a secret, but he had them. And so the kids, a couple of Strawbridge boys and the Plum boys and my two nieces, they all were in this group, you know, and Beale Wright Morris and Lucy Dunn, my youngest one, they all had ponies, and we went fox hunting and we did shows. And then the little events were getting more popular, you know, and I remember taking the kids around and doing their little events and whatnot. And they got into eventing, of course. Lucy, my youngest one, she at about 12 or 14, she said, "I'm not going to ride anymore, Mom." I said, "Fine, no problem." And Beale, she went on and evented a lot. And then I got into the driving, because this wonderful man that raised me and did all the fox hunting with my mother, he was getting older, but I kept him here, and we had the ponies that would drive, and so, okay, we learned to drive. And the kids started to do the combined driving, or I learned how to do the combined driving, just because of the 3-day, the eventing that I learned. I knew what that was all about, and the combined driving was sort of the same idea.
And that's, again, very much self-taught then with each of these disciplines for
everything.
The most part.
Yes, I was all self-taught. Yeah, I didn't know a thing about dressage. I mean, I went and had lessons, of course, as much as I could in the riding days and whatnot, but very self-taught. And the carriage, the little carts and the carriages and the ponies, I didn't know how to hook a pony up. But this man, because he was from a family of farmers and whatnot, he knew all about that kind of a thing, even though he did a lot of fox hunting and whatnot. But he was one of about, you know, 10 kids, boys, and they were all around that area where I lived and whatnot, the whole family. So he taught me how to, we would get a hold of some old harness and start putting them on the ponies and, you know, and go down the road. And then somebody said, "Have you ever done a combined driving?" I said, "Never heard of it." So we ended up at Radnor with the pony. I had no idea what we had to do. And you have to put your spares on a very nice basket, very neat and clean. No way. I got an old duffel bag and threw these spare things that you had to have, you know, and it really, very self-taught. and then ponies went from there, and then horses, and then my husband gave me a Connemara from Mrs. Alexander's in New York. Stony, Gray Stone, Billy Moon, and he was wonderful. I got him when he was 3, and I said, "What do I need a 3-year-old Connemara for?" Well, he ended up being the best thing for everybody. Did Pony Club, and the kids took him to all kinds of rallies, and he fox hunted, and he drove, and he did everything. And then, so he taught me about a single, and then I said, "I need a pair." Okay, so I bought his full brother that was brown. This one was a dark, dark brown. Stony was, and Muddy, what we called Muddy, Greystone Sir Oliver, he was a bay with long ears and not a pretty head exactly, But anyway, he was our other one, and then I raised one. He was the pair, and then I raised one out of a thoroughbred mare that was related to Mr. Wister, the horse I rode in the Olympics. So the family, and I still have a few that go back that direction, the family kept going in there, and Rocky, that was Rocky, Greystone, Sir Rockwell, and he was my spare. Not as good in dressage, but to die, it would die for you. So that's where the driving came, and of course, we did quite well. Went down to Florida one winter for a couple of months, and Heiner Merck was there teaching us, and I would ride my three horses almost every day, because the dressage is what I knew. I didn't know how to make them round driving, but I could make them round riding. So I did a lot of riding, which I personally think is very important. That's the way I got it done. And they really came out beautifully. And when we went to a selection, selection for what? I don't know, in Tampa, Heiner Merck was there, and who was selecting. They were going to send a team of a single, a pair, and a four in hand over to Windsor in the spring. And we were down there training, and I did a fabulous dressage. I mean, it was getting better all the time, and they were very round and good. And my marathon was good enough. I can't remember really what I did, but I was coming along, learning how to do this and whatnot. And the cones, I was not bad in cones, but I went in and had, let's say there were 20 cones, I can't remember how many exactly, but I was clean on half of them and knocked every one of the next half down, every single one of them. And so we looked at the wheels, and the wheels weren't lined up right. So I guess I had an excuse. But anyway, I don't think any other pair wanted to go to England, so they asked me if I wanted to go, and I said, sure, why not? So, you know, we had a single and a four in hand, and I was the pair. And it went fine. I think we went to Brighton, I think, first. It was a one-day driving event, and then we went to Windsor. We won the team Masters Trophy. That's right, at Windsor.
Taking an event horse on its own over to England across the ocean in those days was one operation, but quite another to take a pair of driving ponies and your carriages. How did that all get shipped, Lana?
Oh, my. Well, it was all done through an agency that has pallets. The pallets are just like a horse van, three stalls across, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you could make them into a double, where there's just two horses, and it was just a big box. They put them in, all three horses, and sort of they have their heads out into the alleyway where you could have a little hay and you could get to them, maybe give them a little grain and whatnot. And then they would pick these pallets up. I remember going through the airport, Kennedy Airport, you know, in a long train, clunk, 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 up to the airplane and whatnot. And my three, because I had three, went together, which was good. Some of the other bigger horses, I had little horses. They were, 15 hands to 15-2 was the biggest I had. So mine were little, and they shipped well together. Some of the other teams, of course, were much bigger horses, you know, different. I don't know what breeds they were, but lots of, you know, whatever. They weren't thoroughbreds or anything. They were all driving horses. So they had just a pallet with two horses, maybe. They shared one. It would be a little cheaper. The carriages also went in a pallet. So the carriages all got piled in the pallet, too. And whatever trunks and equipment, bags or whatever could be put around those carriages, if you could get them in a pallet, I think you paid by the pallet just about, and whatnot. It was quite an operation.
And did you have any support at that time from the U.S. equestrian team, or was it all self-financed?
No, we got some support, yes, but you did have to, it didn't pay for everything. They made all the arrangements on how to go, when to get to the airport, how long you have to stay in quarantine or whatever the rules were and whatnot. And they made all the arrangements in that respect, and to go to whatever events we were going to go to and so on. So we had some financial support, but as it still is, I don't think they paid for everything. You better, find some sponsors and whatnot.
Well, then you got into international driving, and on you went to Hungary, wasn't it, the next international competition?
We went to Hungary. Now, that was quite an experience. One of our pairs went ahead, and I think she was competing in Austria or in another country, Germany. I can't remember, but she was not right with us. We went. There were two of us that went to Hungary, and then she came and joined us. And we competed there. We did not do terribly well. I finished. I did well in dressage, and I had my big thing was to be fast enough in cones, and that was as fast as I could go. And you were not, I don't think in those days you were meant to canter. Maybe. But anyway, my whole thing was to go clean in cones. And my dressage was a good, I usually competed on the first day, so I was in the top two or three in the first day of dressage, very respectable. They needed my dressage score. And I was not the fastest by any means in the marathon, but respectable enough. And in cones, the one thing I wanted was a clean round. And I went in there, and I went as fast as I could. What had happened, and I had a clean round. I was thrilled, and when I got through, they said I was eliminated. And the reason I was eliminated is because I had dropped one of my traces. I did not see it. I could not see it, and I wasn't concentrating on it at all. But one of the inside traces, for some reason, had come unhooked, and if you do lose a trace, you must stop. I didn't hear a bell. I was concentrating 100% on where I was going to have a clean cones course. So I actually lost it. I didn't lose the whole thing because we had an elimination. One of the other drivers was eliminated in the cross country in the marathon. And nobody did well. So my elimination, it was too bad, but it didn't do anything to, for a medal or anything. We weren't going to medal. But when we left where we were training for a week, if we didn't look like the Beverly Hillbillies with all our carriages and everything in these trucks, open trucks, I tell you, we all had to laugh like mad. It was really funny. The Hungarians, it was funny. Anyway, that was our Hungarian experience. And then the next time was Austria, and we had Jimmy Faircloud with a pair and Tucker Johnson with a pair and myself. Now, that was different. We won that by the skin of our teeth, and due to Diane on the back of my carriage, I think she was the one that got that, because I had one horse that would jiggle just a little, and you were allowed 5 seconds to correct it. And I could correct it in 5 seconds. And she had that watch in front of our referee, who was a person that had to sit in your carriage with you and do the timing and watch your horse if he jigs or whatever may be the things. That's changed too. I don't think they have them anymore. So, but we won that. And the thing that I did that I thought was is my spare horse, Rocky, which was a Mr. Wister ancestor, sort of. I had never really done him. He'd done everything, but I'd never competed him in the marathon with Muddy. I always took Stoney, who was the first one I had. He was my very sane, very wonderful guy. But Muddy had more, what do you want to say, go. He would just die for you, and Rocky was the other one that would die for you. Stoney would sort of, a good pair. They both have to think and pull together. And that's where I learned what the difference was. Before that, I never knew how important it was to have two that think alike and work alike. And because I'd been working with these horses, I always drove all three of them. And in the morning, two mornings, I guess, before, I said to Diane, my God, I never had a pair, marathon, not dressage, that turned and thought and responded and were light in the mouth and knew exactly what my hand said, left, right, or whatever. And I said, I'm going to put Rocky in there. It was the first time I ever did it, and thank God I did. It was fabulous. And my marathon was very good for me. Remember, they're little. So but my Rocky was the one that jiggled only not more than 5 seconds, but she was really hot on it with this referee. So we didn't have any penalties in that. So then that's where we won the gold for the teams.
You didn't necessarily set out to become a world champion, but it happened. You made history in the Olympics as an event rider, and now you're world champion. I'm curious, though, Lana, what was it that appealed to you about driving, that you would make that switch and enjoy it and be so successful? What was the attraction?
You know, I am self-taught, and I'm not competition. Winning the blue ribbon, I didn't care what. What my whole thing was is, did myself and the horses do the best they can? Am I getting it? And that's where I was always pleased when they did what I thought they ought to do. And, you know, my riding days in eventing were over. I didn't have another event horse, and I had two kids and all this other thing. And when I got into the ponies and we did a little event, I said, oh, my gosh, this is the same as three-day event. I mean, we had you start out with an A section, which is a trot, same thing as in, you know, that used to be in the three-day. I think you could have 10 kilometers. I'm not sure. We ran quite a few events, but I don't remember all the rules. 10 kilometers maybe, and then you have a walk section of 1 kilometer, and then you have, and in those days you had a speed section of 5 kilometers, and my horses had to go as fast as they could at a trot. You weren't allowed to canter. So the little ones, it was everything I could do to make the speed time, but I could just do it. And then they have another walk section of probably a kilometer, where you can't jig, and then you have your 10-minute box or whatever to recover. Then you have your marathon, your hazards. In those days, they're called hazards. And I think that could be up to 10 kilometers also. So it was very much like the three-day, and I said, oh, my gosh, putting all this together, it just was fabulous, and I had three little horses. Why not, you know, with getting out of the eventing? I love the eventing and whatnot, but I sort of, you know, I had it and I didn't have another horse. I tried two or three others, but they didn't pan out really. So that's how I got into the driving.
Well, you mentioned Beale, your daughter, who of course was a successful eventer in her own right, and she also groomed for you when you were driving, didn't she?
She did. She went to all of them. She went to Hungary and she went to Austria. Yep. She absolutely just, we backed each other all the way. I went to all her events and she went to mine. And it was just great. the other daughter is great, but she was a runner and a Pilates and lacrosse and just different. She was very, very active and whatnot. So she didn't want to do that. But,
so having become world champion in driving, not to be resting on your laurels, you moved on to endurance to tackle that. How did that come about?
Well, when I was in Vermont, in the years of 57 and 58 and 59, Vermont was definitely not quite as, you know, things have gone, the roads are better and there's more houses around and whatnot, but it's still pretty wild up there. And there were a lot of roads, but I would go out on my old mare. I did a 100-mile ride up there. I think the same year, in 57, I believe it was 57 or 58, but I had my Chestnut mare up there trying to learn dressage, which wasn't as good, so I ended up with Mr. Wister after a while. But I had a horse that I got from the hunt field, a thoroughbred horse that my mother sent up because my mare was going lame and whatnot, and I was going to do this 100-mile ride. Well, it was a competitive where you had 3 days of it, not an endurance, which was all at one. But anyway, I was going to run 100 miles. But I would go out, never tell anybody where I'm going. I didn't know where I was going. And I would go out in the middle of those, taking any kind of a trail or old logging road or anything, and ride for hours up in Vermont. And I just love to go and investigate, see where this goes and where that goes and so on. And that's where I just love to ride and out in the country, still do. And that's where the endurance sort of came in. After the horses, the Connemaras and whatnot, you know, the kids grew up and the Connemaras, they got old and they weren't going, you know, weren't going anymore. And one had a little leg problem, you know, just the normal things. And they retired and died here on the farm. And so then I had a Connemara stallion that I had that I got from Mrs. Alexander. My husband got me. Anyway, that was Stone. Thor. Greystone from Greystone Farm, Thor. And I hunted him and we drove him. But he wasn't going to, he was a stud and he wasn't going to be that. But he was a fabulous horse. The kids rode him. Beale rode him in events. Wonderful jumper. Just a typical good Connemara. Part, a little bit of thoroughbred in him and whatnot. But I said I was going to take him in my first 100-mile ride. This was endurance. It took me 22 hours. I did get him through. The 22 hours, you were allowed 24. I said, this is not the way you do this. You know, and he was moaning and groaning and saying that he couldn't stand this, even though when I got him home, he rolled about 7 times in the stall, so he wasn't dying. But that's where I started it, and then I realized, you know, all these endurance horses, most of them are Arabs. So I dug up an Arab out in Wyoming, Montana, I guess. And some people out there. So I rode a couple of little 50s and things, and I bought this horse and started that way. And that I just loved to ride. I just, you know. And then as the Arabs went along, I bought a few right off the racetrack. And the three that I have right now are all from the same man off the racetrack. And I'm hoping to take, I have one that is 17 now. Now he won the 100 last year, and he won the 100 the year before up in Vermont. It's a very good ride for him because it's enclosed a little bit, not wide open fields. He likes Vermont and he loves the mountains. So I'm going to try to see, someone else is riding him, not me, but see if we can get him through one more time. Why stop him? You know, he's happy, he's sound, he's, so go on with it.
Well, a great fun part of endurance, Lana, is of course the crewing, the whole team effort, and the challenge of getting those horses fit. You will, of course, have had the experience in the long, long format of eventing, getting horses fit for endurance in eventing. So that probably helped you, did it, for the endurance competition itself?
Absolutely, absolutely. Completely different training, you know, a little different. You don't have to do as, you can do some rides and just ride. They have to be fit, and their pulse has to come down to a 64 before you can go to the vets, so your time can start for your 40-minute hold or your hold, whatever the vets have put on the time there. And the horse should have a good pulse. I must say the 17-year-old horse doesn't have the best pulse, but has it not been a great experience to try to get him through as quick as the others? So it's interesting. You know, it's all been very interesting. It's a challenge. It's a challenge that I can do a little bit. And Diane, she is just a sensation on getting the horses through and knowing when, you know, when we can go in and take a little chance to go to the vets. Because if you go to the vet too early and the pulse is not at 64, you're then sent back to either the end of the line or you have to wait for 10 minutes or something. And, of course, that's a real waste of time. So it's just a great challenge.
You've also been very involved, as you mentioned, with driving, organizing competitions as well there, particularly at Fairhill.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I've been, we put on driving events up there a few years ago. We had a part with the three-day, with Fairhill International three-day. We did driving also, but as a lot of these do, it was hard to run. We weren't having enough. We wanted to be just advanced at Fairhill because Fairhill International is advanced, the three-star, and we wanted to just be advanced, but there really wasn't enough advanced drivers to make it very exciting, and we didn't have foreign hands are so fabulous. Boy, is that not an exciting thing to see good foreign hands, but I think most of them are in Europe, you know, the good ones. We do have a couple of good ones here and whatnot, but there's not enough to make up a whole advanced course, you know, classes. So the driving at Fairhill, too bad, is not any longer. I think everybody's going south now. They like spend their winters in the south.
When you look back on your career with horses, Lana, who would you say was most influential with each of those disciplines, with eventing, driving, and endurance for you?
Is it Sheila Wilcox?
Yes.
In Europe, yeah. In England, that was, oh my God, she was my idol. Because she'd won badminton, she had wonderful horses and so on, and I just remember that was my beginning. Boy, I'd love to go to badminton. I'd like to, you know, just... not that I want to be like, just to see if I can do it, but she was sort of my person that I wanted to do, copy or whatever. And the driving, I was just really self-taught, so I didn't know anybody. Endurance, Valerie Kanavy, of course, you can't beat her. She's got a lot of horses, you know, you have to have. She's great, and there's a lot, there's some good endurance people nowadays, you know, very good endurance people. So, and we're all learning. It's a real learning experience. Oh, my God, coming from a racing background with my mother having race horses and whatnot and owning Kelso and whatnot, in those days, I was taught sort of, you know, where you hay, you don't put water, you put mild water on them, you wash them, you walk them, you know, the whole thing. And we all did that kind of treat your horses that way and whatnot. And nowadays, you take these Arabs and they're going 20 miles or something, and they come in and you're going down, walking along with them to cool them with ice water, as cold as it can be. Pour it on them, just pour it on them, and anything they'll drink, let them drink as much as they want. You know, it's just a completely different way of doing. When you think of how a racehorse is taught. Is treated, taken care of, to the way that endurance horses are treated. Now, I am very particular about it, but we do learn about the water, and I must say some of the endurance horses look rough, and some, hey, but they still do well, so I don't know. I don't know.
And when you look at eventing in particular and how the sport has changed, what are your impressions of it now compared to how it was when you were in your heyday?
Well, it is tough. I'm not saying that it's not tough. It's still very tough because all the combinations and all the turning, oh my gosh, I could never have ridden the way it is now. It was more of a cavalry, of a endurance type course, big fences, just run and jump them, but not as much technical riding, very technical now. I guess you want to say it is a glorified horse trial nowadays, you know, even the 4-star and the 3-star, but I never could do it. I mean, it's very, very, it's hard. I like the long floor method. I guess I grew up with that, so I like it. But I do understand why it had to change, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but I've got to say that I enjoyed the steeplechase and the endurance part of it. So, but the horses have to be fit and they have to be good jumpers, and it takes a little bit different kind of a horse, I think, you know. So I do understand, but I don't love it, you know. I was lucky. I was in the right years.
So for someone who has confessed not very competitive, just doing it because you were self-taught and, you know, for your own challenges in preparing horses for competition and being the best you could be, mm-hmm. when you look back on your career and what you've achieved, which of those accomplishments would you be most proud of?
Well, I think the driving, probably, because of all the dressage that I was able to do in the early years with Mr. Weichen, and to be able to transfer all this into a driving horse, and to learn how to do the hazards, one of the most important things, Udo, Hockey Shorts, they said, say Hockey Shorts, that's not quite right, but he was wonderful. He was fabulous in the marathon. But the most important thing, I think, in your hazards is to be very, very correct. There's an awful lot of hoopla and bang bang and going on and stuff, but you know, you don't want to hit a thing. You can go faster if you're not hitting anything. You're smooth. You want to be very smooth and correct. And there's your dressage. It all goes back to dressage. All of it, you know. And then your horses have to be schooled really well. So I think maybe my driving, probably, because I said the one thing I want to do, and this would be show jumping too, you know, is I wanted to have a clean, I would like my score to count someday. Just my score to count. And in Austria, when we won that medal, my score did count. Every single one. It scored a little differently in that you take the best 2 out of 3, I think, yeah. You can have the best 2 dressage scores and the best 2 marathons and the best, you know, cones, something. And mine could have counted. All of mine were good. So they could have counted all of them, but then you could take whatever, you know. So I think that's probably most satisfying. I got my horses round, and I learned how to do the hazards, and you know, I did a few little clinics. I think I could have told a few people. I would love to have given a few more little clinics with people that wanted to learn, because I had some wonderful trees here, and I would go in my trees three times a week, 4 times a week with my pair carriage and whatnot, and to go into the smallest places just so the pole could get through and keep trotting, just keep trotting. So the horses would do almost, well, they would do a trot, slow, 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 so you can make the turn and never bump the pole. And I think that kind of a thing was absolutely the best thing I ever did. I never was told how to do anything except Udo. In Canada, I had a lesson or two with him in some trees and whatnot, but he gave me a lot of, you know, something to think about. So I was very self-taught. And that's, you know, that's about it. But I was proud of my driving, and I love the endurance. Okay? Yeah. Good riding. You know, you don't have to dress up. No, everything up to there was, you know, you wanted to be very, all of your riding attire. I mean, you know, you have your tails and the dressage, and you're just to the teeth, which I absolutely agree with, you know. Don't, and the driving is the same way. You know, you have all the fancy and the polish and everything. It's great, but, oh, nerve-wracking, geez. And then you've got the good old endurance, and they look like homeless on horseback is what they call them. So it can be, I mean, some of them are, you know, when you go international, I think they do kind of dress you up a little. You have to have a polo shirt on and collar and so on, which is getting a little bit fancier. But, you know, when you're going to ride for 8 hours or something like that and possibly water everywhere and stuff, you know, you don't want to have too fancy.
Yes, more comfortable and informal.
Exactly, exactly.
And you mentioned that you still have horses around now, some mares. What is an ideal day for you then now, Lara, with your horses?
Now, well, I'm down in very flat country, and fortunately Fair Hill is just about a half an hour drive, so I go up two or three times a week and ride, mainly because I've got one young horse that I got off the track last October, November. He won his last two races. He was just a little Arab, and I was really fortunate. He's not very big, and I got him, and he ended up being the best hunter. Nothing bothered him. So we're going along now just to get him. The one thing, he's 9, 8 years old, and he raced last year, so he's been fit. He has a base on him, but it's only a racing base, and he needs to get his muscles tuned to the hills. So I go up there because I'm going to try to take him to Vermont and see if he can get through a 50, which is fine, and I think maybe. We did a 40 about three or four weeks ago up in Vermont, and he managed, but he was getting tired. His muscles were getting tired, so you don't want to burn them up. So I'm just go to Fair Hill about three times a week or so, and we jog hills and walk hills and just anything that's up and down and up and down. And he's learning how to go down a hill. When I got him, you know, he's strictly off the racetrack. He didn't know what water was. He didn't know what a bridge was. He didn't know what anything was. Very good mind, though. He's a nice horse. So we'll see. You know, it's just a challenge. It's fun. So that my riding is two or three days a week up there. And fox hunting in the winter, we were able to hunt just about 3 days a week almost all winter up there. It's slow. The hounds are great, but, you know, I know the country, and I can cut across and hear them, and we got a lot of nice older people. It's not, you know, only at 25 people allowed in the field anyway, so it's very, very nice. It's great for me. I love it, and I love the fox hunting and the hounds. It's just wonderful.
Well, what an amazing career, and on it goes, Lana. What fabulous memories that you have. I'm so delighted that you were able to share those with me today. Thank you so much indeed. It's been a great pleasure.
You're very welcome.
You can find out more about the U.S. Equestrian Federation's Lifetime Achievement Award by visiting the website at usef.org. I'll be back next week with Tick Maynard explaining how event horses learn. And also a continuation in the series profiling the USEF's under-25 winter training list riders. That's all next week on the USEA's official podcast. In the meanwhile, don't forget to check out the website at useventing.com for all the latest news and follow us on social media. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.